All right, let's dive into a case that still has lawyers talking. Even after all these years, Sheffy Mathis, it's 1964. Imagine you're running a company known for its unique style. And then suddenly this aggressive investor starts buying up your stock. And you're pretty sure his motives aren't exactly pure, you know. So can you actually use company money to buy him out just because you just don't like his style?
That's the question at the heart of this case, isn't it? To really get it, we need to understand the story. It all revolves around Hull & Furnace, a furnace company, and an investor named Arnold Marimont. Now, Marimont, he had a certain reputation. He was known for, let's just say, shaking things up.
Sounds like a classic corporate clash brewing. So tell me more about these players. What made them clash?
Well, Hull & Furnace was unique. They didn't sell through stores. They had like this army of door-to-door salesmen. And it worked really well for them. And they were, very protective of this Mahdi. Then you have Arnold Marimont, head of Motor Products Corporation. And he'd built this reputation not just for acquiring companies, but sometimes dismantling and liquidating them. Not exactly the kind of investor you want to see sniffing around, right?
Definitely not. So how did this all unfold? Did Marimont just like walk into Hull & Furnace and demand they change everything?
Not quite. It started a bit more traditionally. He proposed a merger, but Hull & Furnace, they rejected him. Flyout probably sensed trouble ahead, but Marimont, he wasn't one to give up easily. He started buying up Hull & Furnace stock quietly on the open market. By August of 57, he'd amassed a cool 100,000 shares.
Wow, that's a pretty serious move. I could see why Hull & Furnace might have started to worry. Did they just sit back and watch?
Oh, not at all. They knew Marimont's reputation, you see. They were genuinely worried he'd dismantle their sales model, crush employee morale, maybe even liquidate the company altogether. They saw him as a threat to their very existence, really.
Okay, so they decided to fight back. But how do you fight back against an investor who's, at least on the surface, playing by the rules?
They took a bold step, you could even say risky. They decided to buy Marimont out. They offered to buy back 155,000 of his shares. And not just at market value, they offered him a premium, paid him a hefty sum to just walk away.
Wow, talk about high stakes. So this couldn't have gone over well with everybody, right? I mean, spending company money like that, someone had to object.
You're right. Some shareholders weren't happy. They sued, claiming this buyback, it was just a way for the board to entrench themselves, hold on to their power, even if it meant spending a fortune.
Okay, so here's where it gets legally interesting. This ended up in court, right? They didn't just side with the board and say, hey, it's their company.
Well, it's interesting because the initial ruling actually favored the shareholders. The Chancery Court, they found the buyback wasn't justified and sided against Hull & Furnace.
Hold on. So the shareholders won the first round. That's a twist. What happened next? Did Hull & Furnace just give up?
Not quite. They appealed. And this is where it goes to the big leagues, the Delaware Supreme Court. And this is also where we get the famous Sheff test.
The Sheff test. Okay, now I'm really intrigued. But tell me, did the Delaware Supreme Court agree with the first ruling? Or did they shake things up?
They threw a curveball, actually. The Delaware Supreme Court overturned the lower court's decision. They ruled in favor of Hull & Furnace. They said the buyback was legal, but there were conditions.
So a win, but with an asterisk. And those conditions, I'm guessing, are what we call the Sheff test.
You got it. In this case, it set a precedent that's echoed through corporate law to this day.
So let's break down this Sheff test, huh? What did the court say a company has to prove to justify a move like this? It could be abused pretty easily, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the court knew that. They basically said if a board wants to use company money for a buyback as a defense, well, they need to show a few things pretty convincingly.
Okay, so what's the first hurdle? What's the foundation of this test?
The core principle is good faith. They have to prove their main goal was to protect the company, not just their own jobs or, you know, their egos. They can't just say, oh, we felt threatened. They need proof, hard evidence.
So they need to show they really believe this investor was a real threat to the company. What kind of, like, evidence are we talking about?
Exactly. And the court, they gave some guidance. They said the board needs to do a real investigation into this threat. Think of it like legal due diligence, right? They got to gather evidence, talk to experts, look at other options, basically show they didn't just, you know, react with what thinking.
So good documentation is key. They need to show they took it seriously, did their homework before doing something so drastic. Anything else the court really hit on?
Yeah, they were clear that the board's main intent couldn't be entrenchment, just clinging to power. You know, they saw the potential for problems there. So the burden of proof, it's on the directors. It's not enough to just say we were scared. They got to prove it.
That makes sense. Sounds like they wanted to stop boards from using this as a free pass anytime an investor they didn't like showed up. So what happened if a board doesn't, you know, meet this burden of proof? What are the consequences?
Oh, they can be big. If they can't prove they met the chef test, their actions could be seen as a breach of fiduciary duty, and that can mean personal liability.
Wow, so real consequences for these directors. It's not just like a slap on the wrist, Carr. So in Sheffy Mathis specifically, what did the court find? Did Hall and Furness, did they pass the test?
They did, yeah. The court really looked at the evidence. They saw Marmont's history of, liquidating companies. They saw the potential problems for Hall and Furness's sales model and what it could do to employee morale. And Hall and Furness, they talked to experts, documented everything, even looked at different financing options.
So they made a strong case that this wasn't just like a gut reaction to an investor they didn't like. But you said some directors still faced consequences. What happened there?
Right, that's important. Most of the board, they were protected by the business judgment rule, right? It gives them some leeway if they make a mistake, as long as it's an honest one. But four directors, they were found liable personally. They hadn't fully understood the financing options, so the court basically said, "You didn't do your homework, and there are consequences."
So no blanket protection. Even if the action is okay, individual directors can still be on the hook for their choices. It really shows how important it is to be, involved and informed on these boards. But let's zoom out a bit. We've talked a lot about Chef, but why does this case from, what was it, 1964, why does it still matter today? How does it affect things now?
It's amazing, isn't it, how a case that old can still be relevant. Sheffy Mathis, it drew a line. It said boards have power, yes, but it's not unlimited power. They have to use it responsibly, openly, and for the company's good.
So it's about finding balance, protecting the company, but also stopping boards from acting like, dictators. Did Chef do all this by itself, or were there other cases that kind of built on it?
You know, it's funny you say that. Chef actually came before another big case, UNOCAL. Remember UNOCAL from law school, the proportionality test?
Yeah, absolutely. UNOCAL says any defense a board takes, it's got to be in proportion to the threats, right? So small threat, small response. Did those two cases ever conflict?
Not really. They work together. Chef looks at the why was the board acting in good faith, and UNOCAL looks at the how was their response reasonable, proportional. They kind of complement each other, make a stronger framework for these situations.
Okay, so like a 1-2 punch. Chef checks the motive, UNOCAL checks the method. Together, they make sure boards aren't just, throwing their weight around with consequences.
Exactly. And this framework, it's still very much in use today.
Wow, so a case from the 60s still affects how boardrooms work now. That's pretty amazing. So what are the big takeaways from Chef for businesses today and all this complexity? What should board members and investors, what should they keep in mind?
For board members, the message is clear. If you think there's a threat, document everything. Get expert opinions, talk to lawyers, build a strong record that shows you really looked into it. Don't just chat about it and make a decision. Show you had a process, they'd be ready to defend it in court.
So careful records and a clear process, that's good advice. What about for investors? How does Chef help them?
Well, it reminds investors that, yeah, boards have some power to protect the company, but it's not a blank check. They can't just do whatever they want. They answer to shareholders and to the law. Chef is a check on their power,
So investors aren't just like sitting there passively. They have ways to fight back if they think something's wrong. That's good to know. This has been really interesting. We've looked at Sheffy Mathis, the history, the test, how it still matters. But before we wrap up, I'm curious, are there any real-world examples of this Chef test in action today? Like, how does this case actually show up in, modern corporate battles?
It really does, and it shows how Sheffy Mathis is still relevant. We see it in so many situations, like hostile takeovers or when shareholder activists are, pushing for changes.
So it's not just some like old case they talk about in law school. It's actually used.
Oh, yeah, it has teeth. Okay, so imagine a tech company, right? And some big competitor wants to buy them out, a takeover. The board might say, "No way, this will kill innovation, hurt our culture, people could lose their jobs." But under Chef, they can't just say that. They need proof, How would the takeover actually hurt the company?
So it's like they got to build a case with data, expert opinions, not just we have a bad feeling kind of thing.
Exactly. Or think about this. An activist investor wants a company to change its environmental policies, let's say. The board pushes back, saying those changes would be too expensive or just won't work. But again, they got to show that they're not just, resisting change for the sake of it. They got to show if they've looked at the costs and the benefits and made a smart decision.
So Chef adds this layer of like accountability. Boards can't just hide behind vague stuff. They got to be ready to explain themselves.
Right, and that changes things. Boards have to think ahead, be more careful, document everything.
It's wild how one case can have such a big, lasting effect. Sheffy Mathis, it wasn't just about like furnaces and one investor. It changed how corporate governance works.
Absolutely. And it's still guiding courts and boardrooms today with all the mergers, acquisitions, activists. You know, the whole game between companies and investors is shaped by it.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Sheffy Mathis, what's the main takeaway? What should our listeners remember?
I think the big thing is this. Corporate law, it's not just theories and boardroom fights. It's about finding that balance between letting companies succeed and protecting everyone who has a stake in them. And Sheffy Mathis, even though it's old, it gives us a way to find that balance in a world that's, you know, way more complex now.
Yeah, it shows how these legal decisions have effects that go way beyond just the case itself. Well, this has been fascinating, really. It's amazing how one case can tell us so much about like the whole business world, you know?
My pleasure. These conversations are always great. I hope everyone listening got something out of it, too.
I'm sure they did. And remember, folks, next time you hear about a company buying back stock, you know, at a premium or doing something defensive, think of Sheffy Mathis. Ask yourself, what's really going on? Is the board doing the right thing, or is there more to it?
That's the right attitude. A little healthy skepticism, you know, and asking the tough questions. That's always important in business and law.
Well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Sheffy Mathis. Until next time, everyone, keep those legal minds sharp.